The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hello, Dr. Ray. I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Why do I have to be the insightful professional?
Thank you for empowering me.
Here's what I think is going on.
I think you're a hoot and a half.
My idea, my theory, my guidance is a bit of a stretch.
I just love your show.
Does that comfort you?
No.
Am I close?
No.
You are really smart.
I am sensitive and understanding and nurturing.
Your show to me is like a comedy information show.
Did I make you feel a lot better or what?
No, you made me feel worse.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Yeah, well, sometimes you gotta feel worse before you feel better. You know how that is. If we only told people things which made them feel better, well, I'd have to say we wouldn't be real helpful. There are times, and you got to figure out how to do it, and when those times are, and how gently to do it, especially to someone you really, really love, what to say. Always keeping in mind that your observation could be skewed. Your observation could be colored by your subjective impression. Keep that in mind. It'll keep you humble. I can teach you how to be humble. Got a new book coming out. Just wrote it the other day. The three most humble people I know and how I taught the other two. Thank you for being with me on The Doctor Is In. This is E-Person Monday. We've had to find a way to take in. I mean, I get as many emails, if not more, than we get calls. Hundreds, sometimes a month. As a result, and a lot of that's coming from the TV show, because there's a clip, there's a little drop in on the TV show that says, we would like to hear from you. So please send your email to ray@drray.com, because there's a contact page on the website. And we get a lot. And in some way, some small way, I attempt to answer every email. Even if it's just a line or a referral to a therapist or some such thing. If I have not answered your email at all, then I either didn't get it, or I've been getting a whole lot of emails that are coming in with all kind of odd writing, different languages, funky looking stuff. And I don't know what to make of it, and some people are telling me that that's because if you try to download them on your smartphone, they don't come through. I don't know any of that. But if that's the case and you thought, yeah, I wrote him, he never answered me, it's definitely because I didn't get it. Or I got it in a format that was just simply not translatable. Okay. On to the manilog. Most drugs are dose dependent. And that is, they're clinical, physiological, medicinal effect generally goes up with the dosage, up to a point. Some of them asymptote out, which means that, say, for example, an 80 milligram dose of a statin is not necessarily twice as effective as a 40 milligram dose. The effectiveness slows down. And then there's a point where the doses become toxic. That's very, very careful that doctors have to keep an eye on this. I read once, this is a little off the subject, but I thought I'd throw it in here. I read once where at some point down the road, they're going to look back on what we did, that we put toxic substances, potentially toxic substances, into the body to use therapeutically. And the next big quantum leap in pharmaceuticals is going to be actually figuring out ways, and we do some of that now, figuring out ways to enhance the body's own response to whatever pathological process might be going on. There are some drugs, however, and this was particularly true when they used to treat what used to be called mania, old manic depressive illness. It's not called that anymore. It's called bipolar, but at one time, it was manic depressive illness, and lithium was a salt. It was a drug that was used to treat mania, and it was pretty effective. However, it had what was called a therapeutic window, which means you have to get in a certain dose level, and you did blood work to check the dosage. You had to get within a certain dose level for maximum effectiveness. You go above that, you're just toxic. You go below it, it doesn't work. So there's a therapeutic window. There's a place. It has occurred to me over the years of being a shrink that many parents look at discipline in the same way, that there's a therapeutic window. In the words of Ricky Ricardo, let me explain. Parents will say, I would do that. I would put him in a corner. I'd make him write an essay. I'd make him go to his room. Whatever consequence they choose doesn't seem to make any difference. Doesn't bother him. She goes to the corner. She sings. Doesn't matter. Doesn't make any difference. Or they'll say, if I do that, he'll go crazy. He'll melt down. It'll get even uglier. That's why I don't do it half the time. If I took that smartphone from her, I can't. The last time I tried it, it was a reaction like nothing I ever saw. It was so extreme. It was toxic. So it leads one to think that in imposing a discipline consequence, there is just the right amount of consequence where it matters, but it doesn't matter so much there is an unbelievably ugly response to the consequence. A therapeutic discipline window is what we could call it. Don't worry necessarily about a therapeutic discipline window. In most cases, it doesn't matter. For example, let's say you got a little four-year-old and you use the corner a lot with that four-year-old. It doesn't seem to really bug them. They go to the corner. Sometimes they put themselves there. Sometimes they just kind of stay there and fall asleep. And you're thinking, this ain't working. No. You don't look at whether it's working by their reaction. That's not a good gauge. You look at whether it's working over time by the behavior that you've targeted. And sometimes that takes time. You can't see results in the first 27 times you send him to the corner. It's like a drug. You got to get up to a therapeutic dose with a lot of drugs. And some of them, it takes a week or two to get up to a therapeutic dose. Well, it's the same thing with discipline. It takes a while to get up to a therapeutic dose. On the other hand, let's say that the reaction is just intense. You told him to go to the corner and he melts down like a crazy man. Wow. You don't want to go through that again, do you? Whoo, we got to find something that doesn't breed that kind of response. Not necessarily. He's mad. They don't like this at all. And I typically have to warn parents when they come into my office and they're talking about this kid as a behavior management problem. We talk about structure, talk about the follow through, talk about what they can want to do. And I have to warn them. Say, you got to understand, you may see reactions like you've never seen before because you've changed the rules. Up to this point, you've been inconsistent or you've backed off or you've tolerate, then exploded. So your approach hasn't really been across the board predictable. And when you make it obvious that you're going to do what you said you're going to do each and every time, this is not going to go down well. And that reaction doesn't mean you've stumbled upon bad discipline. It may mean you stumbled upon very good discipline. Draw a parallel to cancer treatments. One of the problems, of course, with chemotherapy is the reaction. Oh, my. Some people are just knocked flat with the reaction. Some people are exhausted for 4 days. Some people have all kinds of ugly side effects. Terrible reaction. But yet, over time, it pushes back that cancer. May cure it. If it doesn't cure it, pushes it back. It's unpleasant. Ooh, Who wants to have that kind of reaction? Wouldn't it be nice if it didn't? And thank God, with better technology, better pharmacy, those reactions are getting less and less, because they can also be dealt with pharmacologically. So the therapeutic discipline window is not something you really need to be concerned about. You don't have to try to struggle and find the exact appropriate consequence that is going to be more impactful than him not caring, but less impactful than him exploding. No, you pick what you think is a reasonable consequence. You impose it. Do it with the best consistency that you can. And what will happen is that, well, actually, you'll get a better window. The window will get thrown open. Here's why. On the lower end, the uncaring end, he will start to care. Initially, he didn't care about going to the corner or writing an essay or being in his room for an hour at a time for his disrespect. He didn't care. It's no big deal. But as you were predictable and calmly consistent, the 47th time, he started to care. So that's the first thing. The second thing is he will get better at dealing with the consequence because he knows that's what it is. The first times you did it, this is really I don't like this one bit. Why are you doing this? This is ridiculous. I'm not writing an essay. But as he finds that, yes, he's going to be required to write the essay, and that's how you will approach this, his intensity, his ugly reaction, if you will get less intense and less ugly. Therapeutic window is good for drugs. Some drugs. Not all that good for discipline. All right, when we come back, I want to touch upon a couple of e-persons that are commentaries, not necessarily questions, but commentaries. And I think they're rather thoughtful. I'm Dr. Ray.
You can't imagine life without your faith, and Henry Ford Village wouldn't have it any other way. Residents can tune in to live televised services from our very own chapel every Sunday and online devotionals every day, making sure you stay connected, energized, and feeling good through faith the whole week through. Connection. That's what it means to be part of a faith-based community, always bringing each other closer to one another and closer to God. Let us show you what it's like. Schedule your virtual walkthrough at henryfordvillage.com today.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at avemariaradio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to avemariaradio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
My sisters, nieces, and I are all on a group chat. We communicate almost daily through this app, and I love it. It keeps us all in the family loop. Often one of us is requesting prayer, whether it be about our health, our jobs, our children, our spouses. Well, it varies, but it's often. This asking for prayer was something I did not do when I was younger, but it's something I often do today. I've asked for prayers on social media and in text to friends and family, on the phone and in person. I've asked for prayers for myself and for others. We know that Scripture teaches us that whatever you ask in prayer, you will receive if you have faith. We're also called to pray without ceasing. My sisters, nieces, and I always report back with, "Thanks for the prayers," and "This is what happened." Of course, pray for yourself to our Heavenly Father, but don't hesitate to ask others to do the same. This has been a Christ-centered communication message. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo, a communications evangelist.
Dr. Ray Guarendi, thank you for joining me. This is a co-production. The Doctor is in Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Co-production of the Ave Maria Radio Communications and the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Some pushing on to 400 stations now, which means my listenership, it's getting very close, and I'm impressed with this, to close to 200 people. 200 people. And many of those are receptionists, secretaries, staff at the various affiliates. They have to listen because the radio is on. I'm counting it. It's like that news station, that cable station, all news all the time that's at the airports. You know, you're kind of a captive audience at the airports because they've captured the airport audience. Okay, this is E-Person Sunday, Monday. Just missed it by 2 days. E-Person Monday, I was going to dive into the stack, but there is no stack anymore. It's just a scroll. This is from Maggie. Now, before I read Maggie's E-Person, I want to kind of just throw a little backdrop. There are certain phrases in the modern lexicon that take hold. And because they are just pounded by everywhere, the media, the social media, people, everything, they become part and parcel of our language. And one of these is social distancing. I think Maggie makes a great point. She says, the term social distancing needs to be changed to physical distancing. Physical is a more scientific, more accurate, and more kind, she says, which is not usually associated with scientific and accurate, and more objective word than social. So when we've been instructed to maintain 6 feet of physical distance, there's a measurement between people. The term social distancing is subjective and implies, maybe even states, that we are spacing ourselves as a social penalty and thus thwarting our loving connections to others. Now, there are those who would argue with that, but I think she's on to something, because whenever there's a movement and it is unpleasant, then you have to engineer the language. And the most obvious aspect of this for Christian believers is what they've done to abortion. They have engineered the language. As a guest on my show, the TV show, wonderful lawyer, and she's with the Patients' Rights Council, she said, linguistic engineering precedes social engineering. So social distancing does sound a little nicer, doesn't it? It's a social distancing. It's like I'm doing something that's just, it's good. It's just good. And I agree with her. I think more objective is physical distancing. That's what it is. Okay. She says it won't fix the damage of the pandemic, but it could help attitudes and possibly mental pathology rates. Well, I wish it would. She says, words matter. Oh, so true, so true, so true. Words are the weapons to change social attitudes. You have to find euphemism, terminating a pregnancy rather than killing an unborn baby. And what happens with words, of course, is that the more accurate words are shoved down, yelled down, pushed aside. They're cruel. They're hateful. She says, and she concludes, and this must have been a day I talked to a caller named Alice. Dr. Ray, maybe you could start by calling it physically distancing and make it go viral. Well, I don't know if I can do that with 200 listeners. In softball terms, Dr. Ray, you would not be hitting like Alice. Then she signed it XOX from 6 Feet, of course. That's cute. Maggie, that is cute. Let's see what we got on this one. Dr. Ray, explain what stop mothering me means. I'm an older sibling, as well as a legal guardian for a brother who has multiple disabilities and borderline intellect. I also have a younger sister who says that to me because she seems jealous of my position. I don't know what position that means, maybe competency in life, and challenges everything stated or shared. Well, this is from Mary Lou. Mary Lou, I would think it's best translated in, don't tell me what to do. Seems to be the case. If your brother has enough wherewithal to realize he has certain desires, certain things he wants to pursue, and you recognize those are not good for him, and if you attempt to guide or control him, or even stop him, his major comeback is, don't mother me. Quit mothering me. I know you've probably said, I'm not mothering you. I'm trying to do what's good for you. I'm trying to help you out. I want to do that. Yeah, and you've probably said that, what, 6,257 times? I might just say, I'm not. Or I might even not respond. Whenever somebody has a standard line like that, that they throw at you, which is really translated, don't tell me what to do, there's not a whole lot you're going to do about it. Now, in your brother's case, you have a certain amount of guardianship authority. Not as much as you'd probably like, because I found that out with my daughter. But you do have some. If he wants to call it mothering, there's not a whole lot you're going to do about it. Your sister, on the other hand, I don't know how old she is, but if she's an adult, then I would probably take that as a sign that she doesn't want to hear it. She doesn't want to hear your moral speak. She doesn't want to hear your life speak. She doesn't want to hear your older sister speak. She doesn't want to hear your opinions. She doesn't want to hear your position. She doesn't want to hear your guidance. And for the most part, if you don't shut it off completely, you're going to have to be very selective, picking and choosing when you speak up. It seems like both of your siblings have used the same comeback. Stop mothering me. I'm grown up now. I don't need to not only listen to you, but I don't need to consider what you're saying. Unfortunately, Mary Lou, there's a lot of that in our culture. There is. We generally, as a society, don't like following directions. We don't like following guidance. And this is most obvious in God's guidance. If God's guidance gets in the way of what I want to do, well, then obviously I can ignore that guidance. We could tell God, stop fathering me. Which is in effect what many of us have done. And even in the Christian world, we've decided where we allow God to father us and where we don't. So, good news, bad news. If you think you're going to get him to stop saying that, that's the bad news. You're not. The good news is you don't really have to let it get to you because you recognize that's their way of saying, I'm going to do what I want to do. Don't try to talk me out of it. Which means you can save yourself a lot of frustration by trying to talk them out of it. Now, your situation with your brother may be a little different because, as I said, you may have some legal authority. But your sister, especially if she's an adult, you've probably got none. I'm Dr. Ray. Dr. Rigorindi dispensing a once brand name drug, which was now it's now in generic tricyclonal. Yes, it came off a patent. Good to have you with me. It's a drug that works in any dose. You don't have to have a therapeutic window. As a matter of fact, the more, the better. This is E-Person Monday. This comes from Michelle. I always like these lines to begin with because right away, quick, I get to push my product like a cheap money changer in the temple. I'm wondering if you have any good resources, books about ODD or oppositional defiant disorder. I think you've used another acronym, BRAT. Can you tell me what that means again? It's a good one. Behaviorally regressive attitudinal trauma. The adolescent counterpart to that is significantly nasty oppositional tendencies. SNOT. A friend of mine has a son who has. Now, okay, this is interesting, the language. And I wouldn't expect Michelle to understand this in the sense that I do from my experience, and I don't mean that in any kind of demeaning way. He has. It's like he possesses this disorder. The reality is, he is who he is. He has a certain complex of symptoms or behaviors that somebody in a quote-unquote expert position has decided this is a way to summarize this kid. Friend of mine has a son who has ADHD and oppositional defiance disorder. They seem to have gone to several doctors just to get that diagnosis. Okay, stop the tape. I don't know. I'm going to speculate. But that tells me that these are very frustrated parents, and they've got to find out what is wrong with their kid. Why is he like this? What makes him tick? And we've got to get an answer. And lo and behold, we got the answer. He has these two disorders. Very common. Sometimes I call it the search. I listen to you often and have read all your books. Oh, well, heck. I probably wouldn't have taken this then. If she's read all my books, there's nothing to recommend. All right, I'll keep going. Maybe I can give some help. And I know what you would say about this. The problem is discipline. Not always, but a very high percentage of the time it is. It resides in the parent. Now, the ADHD is a little different. That seems to have a neurological subcomponent to it. The tail end of the temperamental continuum in terms of impulsiveness, in terms of self-control, distractibility, activity level. But the two are very commonly found together. Because ADHD in and of itself does not necessarily indicate behavior problems. But because the temperament of the child is such that if the diagnosis is correct, by the way, and there's a lot of research saying it's overdiagnosed, then there will be behavior problems because it will lead to bad habits on the part of the parent or ineffective habits on the part of the parent. The environmental factor that led to this is the mother ending up being bedridden from a leg injury when the little guy was about 1 to 2 years old for a year or so. Ooh, okay. So essentially, and I don't know if there's a dad, but boy, if mom was incapacitated for that period of time, then you could speculate that the discipline and the parenting and the supervision and the structure took a blow. Okay. Then, oh boy. When the little boy was 4 or 5, Mom became pregnant with twins. And again, on bed rest from about 22 weeks until birth. All right. They've never had a consistent, regular follow-through discipline technique. That's the majority case. Somebody comes into my office with a kid who has been diagnosed either oppositional defiant disorder from somewhere, sometimes family practitioner, their doctor, pediatrician, or ADHD. Much of the time, when we work on the parenting skills, and the parents are cooperative, after a while, I ask the parents, do you still think he's ADHD? And they'll say, not like he was, nowhere near the stuff that I thought was ADHD. And that happens a lot. Okay. I have asked her if the young man will stay in timeout, or if you can tell him to go there, and she said no. He just leaves it. I asked her if she'd try to put him back, and she said once or twice. Okay, so what that indicates is that Mom has just lost authority. And it's very, very common. I see it all the time. When you have a parent who has lost authority, eventually, a good percentage of the time, the child gets diagnosed with something. Why? Well, look at the way he's acting. But what would you expect? This is a kid who needs socialized. He needs to understand limits and structure and respect. And if not, if that doesn't happen, then he's going to have a style that is really difficult. He doesn't necessarily have a pathological disorder. He's doing what you would kind of expect, given the dynamics of the situation. She goes on. So sadly, this little boy is on the second try of drugs. I find it heartbreaking, as I love the family and the little boy, but I feel they want a fairy wand to fix what needs to occur with consistency and hard work. Any advice, Dr. Ray? Any desire to write a book about that? Seems more and more parents want magic wands and don't want to know that the problem can lie with themselves. Well, the books, 3 or 4 of them, are heavily discipline-oriented, Michelle, they are. And I don't know if you've read all those, but there may be some new ones lately. And the most recent one is Raising an Upright Child in an Upside-Down World. So hopefully those will help. And there's an awful lot of stuff on Facebook. I talk an awful lot about the discipline parenting stuff that can help, I think, parents. But they gotta want it. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. Thank you for joining me on The Doctor Is In this E-Person Monday. Question comes up routinely. Is that some cutesy way of describing the program? No, it's not meant to be cutesy. It's meant to be sensitive. I don't want to say email. That's patriarchal. That's insensitive. Because we have a lot of females, and you can't even say female anymore because it's got the word male in it. We have a lot of women. Well, I can't even say women because it's got man in it. I'm also confused. We have a lot of girl person types. I think that's okay. Well, I can't really say girl because that, again, I got in trouble for using that once. It's really hard to know what to say. But anyway, I say e-person because I don't want to say e-male. So, e-person. My name is Reggie. My wife and I have three children, two boys, 23, 21, girl, 17. I've said this before on the program. When I read these emails, I put them in the phone for future use. But I forget where they're going, and I don't read them ahead of time on the show so that I can know. I like to approach this as if somebody were calling, and I don't know exactly where this is headed. So oftentimes I have fun speculating or making a comment after the first three or four lines of the email. Oh, I slipped, of the e-person. And then to find out if toward the end I was accurate. Our 21-year-old son has been extremely distant. And by that, I don't mean he lives far away. He lives with us. But for the last 8 to 9 years, now let's do the math here. 21 minus 9 takes you down to 12. 12. Onslaught of adolescence. For the last 8 or 9 years, he has not shared a single communication with the whole family. Now, I don't know what Reggie means by that. That's hard for me to wrap my head around, not shared a single communication with the whole family. That would mean he'd have to not talk at all. Is Reggie saying that he's just not communicative compared to the other kids or anywhere near what the family would like? Now, keeping in mind, if this started at 12, it's been around quite a while, and it is a very rooted, solidified, fossilized habit. He is constantly, nonstop, on defensive behavior. Okay, now those two would seem to contradict each other, Reggie, because on one hand, if he's not communicative, but then on the other hand, if he's defensive and nasty, then he does communicate, he just doesn't do it in a very pleasant way at all. He talks a lot with crude language. He has no respect for anyone in the house. He says and does whatever and whenever he wants. Whenever any one of us says anything to him, he responds back with hostile and belligerent words and actions. Ooh, what would a belligerent action be? Pushing, shoving, assault, destruction, throwing, kicking a wall, a door, slamming, what? Belligerent actions. All right. Let's see what else. His behavior is totally unacceptable. Okay. Now, so far you're thinking, all right, why are they putting up with this? What's going on here? What's the dynamic that is having them live with this child as he's this completely nasty, uncooperative, and aggressive, according to Reggie? Well, here's part of it. And I saw this once in the extreme, and I'll share it with you when I was back at the mental health center in Columbiana County. However, and there's the big but, he is an athlete, played football throughout high school. Okay, star, right? Works out 5 days a week. Eats very healthy, no sugar, no salt, no oily food. Makes and cooks his own food, does not drink any alcohol, does not smoke, and does not go out with his friends at all, even the ones from high school and or football mates. He's completed 2 years of college, MSU, one each, and he's earned at least a 3-point GPA with over 85 credits. So there it is, you see? It's the old, well, I think I'm giving you the wrong impression. Overall, he's a pretty good kid. How do you characterize these inconsistencies? Well, if you notice, most of what he does well is very self-oriented. He's into physical health. He's into working out. He doesn't want to do certain things that could perhaps cause him trouble. So it's a very, very self-directed kind of conduct. On the other hand, sounds from what Reggie's saying, there's no tolerance for anybody. Otherwise, particularly his family, he's just mean. Just mean. Now, in this case, is Reggie saying, okay, the reason we've put up with this is that there's a quote-unquote good side to him that we're hoping will eventually counterbalance what he does to everybody in the family. Now, let me stop there. I had a kid, I think he was a senior in high school, brought in by his parents. The kid was set to be high school valedictorian. At school, he was an upright, absolutely admirable golden boy. He reveled in the respect, the admiration, and the accolades that he got from everyone, peers and instructors at school. Why'd the parents bring him in? According to their reports, he was so ugly to live with. He was so mean, nasty, belligerent, vicious in his words and actions. With them, they couldn't take it anymore. Do you know his approach to me was? I think he said this on the first visit. Who are people going to believe? Everybody who knows me outside of our house likes me. Are they going to believe my parents? Who's more believable? Look at how I conduct myself out there. Now, part of the... He misunderstood. Because he's dealing with a psychologist. And I'm not one to say, oh, I just can't believe that. How could he be Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde? I gotta really question those parents. Because they must have an agenda of some type. Maybe they're intolerant. Maybe they don't realize what a good son they have. No. I didn't buy any of it. The kid was nasty at home, and he was calculatedly a sweetheart anywhere else. And that was his MO, his modus operandi, his way of operating. Because I'm not shocked by wildly diverse behavior across context. And that's what Reggie's talking about here. There's this aspect of this kid's personality that seems pretty responsible, pretty mature, pretty health-oriented. He goes on. However, he decided to stop pursuing his bachelor's degree and get into real estate investments. At least that's what he says he's doing. He never asks us for any money, but I, as his father, pay for everything except his clothes and his gasoline. We have very poor communication with him. And Reggie asked me to call him. I can't. I can't do that. But I think I asked him to call the show. And as far as I can recall, he hasn't. Well, if they were to come into my office, I would say, why are you tolerating this? Why are you putting up with it? And I can't advise you what to do. This is your decision, your house, your business. But I just am curious. Why are you tolerating this? And how are your other two children looking at this? Thinking we don't do that, or not to that degree anyway. Why are they allowing this? Why are you paying for him? Now, Reggie uses the word we a lot, so I'm going to assume that his wife is at least somewhat agreeable to the whole scenario. Why? What is it? And I see this all the time, and I would explore this. Reggie, I'm going to ask you if you're hearing this E-Person Monday, I would explore this. I'd say, what is it that keeps you persevering in the face of this kind of behavior? And I can speculate on what it is. I mean, most parents take an enormous amount of mistreatment from their young adults because they're afraid. What will happen to the kid? Where will he go? What will he get into? I couldn't live with myself if he self-destructs or he does something nasty. I think Reggie's saying, you know, help us to make him be nicer. Reggie, I'd expect that if you tried to put conditions and limits on this son, he'd go ballistic on you. You've already said he does. So if you say, I'm not paying for your clothes or your car, I'm not even giving you a car, it's in my name, I'm taking it back, what then? What would happen then? What if you said, I'm going to start charging you rent, and the rent is going to be based upon your conduct? It's a sliding fee scale. What would happen? Points to consider. I'm Dr. Ray.
The doctor is in. Now, don't you feel better?
Thank you. Sustaining members, brand new members, and of course, all who have recently renewed your membership. James and Dorothy, Lake Leelanau, Michigan. Teresa, Macomb, Michigan. Brenda, West Bloomfield, Michigan. Bill, Peru, Illinois. Maria, Ann Arbor, Michigan. You can renew your membership. You can become a sustaining member. You can make a one-time gift. AveMariaRadio.net is the place to go. Or click the donate button on that Ave Maria Radio app. Thank you so very much.
Food for the Journey, Sister Ann Shield.
The book of Sirach, chapter 15, verses 15 to 20. If you choose, you can keep the commandments. They will save you. Before man are life and death, good and evil, whichever he chooses shall be given him. Immense is the wisdom of the Lord. No one does he command to act unjustly. To none does he give license to sin. It's we who decide to turn away. It's we who choose sin over virtue. God never coerces. If he did, it would not be love. He offers. He keeps offering himself. We have free choice. We have a free will. What do we choose? You have to make certain decisions. What decisions are you making? See, don't just drift. Make some decisions. Is my life in accord with the gospel? Am I living out my faith? If someone were to judge me today, would they find me guilty of being a Christian? Would it be evident who I am and to whom I belong?
Sister Ann Shields gives you food for the journey, weekday mornings at 6:45 and again at 11:30 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
Looking at the clock here on this E-Person Monday, looks like about 2 minutes. So can't really get into another E-Person. They're still stacked up on the phone. This is from C.S. Lewis, Clives Staples Lewis. The Christian and the materialist. And he uses the word materialist to mean someone who believes that the universe is all there ever is, all there ever has been, all there ever will be. Hold different beliefs about the universe. They can't both be right. The one who is wrong will act in a way which simply doesn't fit the real universe. Consequently, with the best will in the world, he will be helping his fellow creatures to their destruction. Lewis, of course, is a Christian. So he believes that the Christian worldview is the accurate one. There is a God. Christ was God. The moral system that he gave us works. And Lewis says, if you say there is no, or if you say, and nowadays, Lewis is talking about the materialist, meaning the atheist, but nowadays we've got a new atheism, which is, yeah, I believe in God. I might even believe in Christ, but I'll kind of decide which aspects to believe. So we effectively neutralize the teaching. And even with the best of intentions, if you are wrong about the ultimate reality that guides everything, then you will be hurting a lot of people. It doesn't matter how good your intentions are. If you're missing it about the ultimate truth, then whatever advice, whatever guidance, whatever morals you give and practice will only be hurting people, for the most part. That's what Lewis says. Thanks for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. Thank you, Dan McGraw, for taking care of the board over there. Good Lord permitting. Talk to you tomorrow. Thanks for joining me. Walk with God.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.